Good morning and welcome to all of our backstage pass people. Great to see you guys. I am watching the Ebola thing. Do you have your tickets to our one-man show? We're approaching 21 days out, I think. So we're selling tickets along. A lot of people are anticipating that there's going to be lots of room, and there is. It's a big venue, and we're very, very grateful for that. We're grateful to be at the Irvine Improv, and I do want to pay a visit to the Irvine Improv before the actual performance night to see this show. I want to let you guys in on something. This show is going to be far more like on stage. It's going to be far more like the show we do right here. There's going to be a lot more quick interacting. I'll talk to my close personal friends, you know, like Horatio Sanz and some of the guys that helped me with the show originally to see what they think about that. These guys are, by the way, very technically trained stage guys, you know, so they understand how to present something on a stage, and that's really important. And then I take from their advice, I take that and I meld that with what I've seen one of my favorite guys, Eric Bogosian, doing, who's fucking just amazing, you know. His caricatures and caricaturizations and Bogosian's settings are so marvelous. The scene that he takes us into are so great. You know, the one I'm talking about, the one that I liked, was Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. And it was that, indeed. It was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know. Anyway, I'm looking at these kids getting shot. What the fuck is going on? How does a little 14-year-old boy... I understand that you feel threatened, Mr. White police officer and Mr. White truck-driving prick. That you feel scared. And that you've got a gun. So you're scared and you have a gun. What's the next logical thing to do? Shoot whoever it is that's scaring your fucking punk ass. Okay? Now, I have been a big supporter of the police here. It's very interesting. I take shit from all sides, you know. I take shit from people that don't like cops. I take that shit all the time. I've lost good friends, you know, over that. And I've lost, when I say good friends, Facebook friends, you know, whatever. But I've gotten into some serious, you know, arguments with those people. And the end result for me is just, well, if you don't like me, you know, what are you doing hanging around my fucking friend page? I mean, you like the show, go over to the fan page, that's fine. People that are fans, you know, go there. People that just don't like my show, me, nothing about me, don't come around me. That's the way to do it. But if you are, in fact, someone that, you know, likes the show and you like me, and okay, great, we'll try and get you. I don't friend people all that often over there on Facebook, and I'm mentioning Facebook because it's a major social media. What did I just read? 1.2 billion users now? Please. A month? 1.2 billion? 1.2 billion? Forget it.
Jesus, Phil, you know, right now you're cycling back into the infant stage.
Well, I don't think so. I think what Phil did is he went the boo-boo and he did goo-goo.
Yeah, don't do boo-boo and goo-goo?
I don't think that qualifies me as an infant.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever you say, Ace. Wow. Get a load of him, will you? He goes goo-goo and boo-boo.
Never mind. Never mind, okay? So that's what we're going to be doing on stage. Now, here's the thing. When you do a stage show, there's my hand again. I think it's neat. When you do a stage show, me being the big stage veteran that I am, when you do a stage show, you have to use the stage. You don't stand in the middle of the goddamn stage. You see a lot of stand-ups, for instance, going walking back and forth, trying to, you know, work all points of the crowd. That's always very good. But more to the point, you want to use the entire stage because you're using the whole space to give people the impression of place. I'm going to this place. Oh, now I'm going to go talk to this person. And even though they're looking at the same guy, it gives them a sense that the voice of that person and the personality of that person is coming from...
excuse me, I didn't mean to yell, but God damn, man.
Fuck. I smoked a little more of that medicinal weed last night. worked a little better this time. Maybe I'd just be smoking that shit all the time. Is that right? But that's not gonna. That's no. I don't do that. I don't do that shit, man. I'm smoking that dope. I might as well be taking sleeping pills, don't you think? So let me just give you my history with dope. So, you know, you're backstage pass cats, so you know. I smoked weed for the first time when I was 15 years old in the summer before my... No, wait a minute. In my sophomore year in high school, I smoked it. I remember it was the spring or late winter of 1968. There'd been kids in my school who had smoked it before that because the word was out sometime in the late part of my freshman year in high school at LaSalle that there was weed. Now, this was a first for our white Catholic boys' high school. There had been weed in the ethnic parts of town, if you will, or in the jazz underworld, the rock and roll underworld. There'd been dope circulating in America, God knows, since the 19th century when rumor has it and history has it that it came into this country by way of Mexico and up the Mississippi by way of New Orleans. Now then. So I first started smoking dope when I was... sophomore in high school. Now, I've given you my history as a young man. I had very little parenting. I'm not blaming anybody, and yet I am. I mean, look, you know, if there was a kid and the kid has no parenting, there's a parent somewhere to blame for that. I don't give a flying fuck what's wrong with your goddamn fucked up life, you know? I just don't give a shit. When you have a kid, your goddamn life takes second position to that child. And that's just the way it's got to be. Now, that doesn't make you the Hitler of that kid's life. It doesn't mean that you're a fucking genius and everybody else is a goddamn moron. You do your best in raising that child. So I started smoking the dope then, and I was a fairly regular marijuana user throughout my life. From the time I was a sophomore in high school, that would be like I said, early winter, late winter of 1968. All the way on through, I would say... 1975, and then I put down, as we used to say in the day, I put down for about a year, about 2 years, about 3 years actually, because I was concerned with my alcohol and basically my alcohol consumption. By the mid 70s, I stopped smoking weed, but I was drinking a whole lot of fucking beer and a lot of wine. I was not yet a hard liquor drinker, you know. I was a hard liquor though, I'll tell you that much. No, I'm just fucking around. So. I put down for about 3 years until I got to Los Angeles. I was working at that time in radio in Orlando, Miami, New Orleans. I was stone sober all of my time in Orlando. All of my time in New Orleans, and that was a trick. And all of my time in Miami, that was a trick. Although the people that I had, that I hung out with, the people that I ran with in both cities were they didn't use drugs, they didn't drink, and they were a lot of fun. I used to, you know, if I dated a woman, she would generally say to me, if I dated a woman, generally I was dating men then, but I don't care if people believe that. I don't care if you believe that. Maybe it's true. Maybe it isn't. Maybe I am. Maybe I aren't. Anyway, so I smoke. What the fuck is down there, bud?
I don't know.
Well, get it fixed, motherfucker. It looks like something wants to crawl up my leg. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the computer. Now, where's my glasses? So anyway, I smoked that shit, and I stopped around 77, 78 for about 2-3 years. I think by the time I got back to L.A. in 1979, I began again. Okay, so I started smoking and drinking. And I remember when I did, it was a New Year's Eve, 1979. It was a whole bunch of friends of mine out here in Arcadia. We were at a restaurant, the Cask and Cleaver. We were partying. We were having a great time. It was great to be home. I was with all of my crew. I was with my tribe. And I said, fuck it. But I've never had a drinking problem. I think I put down in those days because I was always an overreactive and highly self-critical and self-doubtful man. And I was partying pretty hardy. And I was just... I didn't know what the fuck was wrong with me. I think I found out since that I have sort of an endogenous biochemical depression, you know, that I inherited from my mother. But at that time, I really didn't know. So I stopped using I stopped drinking and that kind of shit. I got back to California, started partying again, and that really didn't bother me at all. I mean, I actually had a great time. It was probably a collection of things that was happening, but I got back to L.A., and the marijuana use was intermittent. I stopped buying it back in the... I don't think I bought an ounce of weed, or not an ounce. How much fucking dope do they sell? Yeah, we used to buy what we called a can or a lid for... Back in the days, you'll not believe this shit, it was like $10 a lid, $10 a can, and then it went to 20, and then I stopped buying it after that. I didn't really give that much of a shit. Although I had friends of mine who bought the shit and used it. You know, I can't get my mind off of this young man, James Foley, and that ape that's standing next to him, that thing in the black hood, and he has that tilted head like a dumb fucking thing that you keep in a vault. You know, only a pure psychopath, somebody with no empathy or feeling, could do to him what that piece of shit did. Now, you can say what you want. I don't give a flying fuck. There's only one solution for something like that. You put a bullet right through its fucking head. You don't even waste the whole cut the head off thing. Take that fucking guy, kill it, you know. But I look at the figure of that thing, that apish-looking, black-hooded fucking animal standing next to that young man he's about to slaughter up like an animal. And you want to, you look, and it's not a human, it's an anti-human. It's an abnormal creation. It's an abnormal thing. It developed free of any... mitigating influence, and slapped a hood on and stood there with the head tilted to one side, standing there like just any dumb fucking sack of shit that only deserves a bullet and nothing more, that you've probably seen many times in your life. I have. You know. That fucking thing is standing there. I don't know what it was doing, waiting for something to happen. You know. And that motherfucker killed that kid. The way you carve up a Christmas turkey. See, take a look at that guy, because those people are in society. They're you're working next to them. I'm telling you, you're working next to them. You're on the same street with them, and they know how to mask it because they have no emotional life, and so they mimic the emotional life around them, and they can become anything, and they lie so effectively that you'd swear to Christ they're telling you the truth. And you go around to everybody and you say, oh, no, I just would never. I can tell you I know this person, and they would never do that. In a million years, let me just tell you, I'm their best friend, mother, father, I'm their pastor, I'm their counselor. They would never do anything, I can assure you. And then they get out, and they go, and they carve up another human being. Great example of that is Edward Kemper, who is in prison right now, probably a very elderly man. At the time, in the early 70s, he went out and picked up hitchhikers and cut their heads off and then put his dick into the mouths of the severed heads. This is one of the things. Now, Edward Kemper is interesting. Psychopathic, yeah, but also delusional and psychotic, because he imagined his mother's voice still babbling to him, even though he'd cut her head off and buried it in the backyard. He did sort of find all of it rather funny. And in recent interviews with Edward Kemper, as psychotically demented as he was, you can't. I don't get angry at him like I do the Ted Bundys and the Richard Ramirez's and all of the psychopathic individuals like that, because I know there's a delusional, there's a psychotic element to him, and when he's not sick, he's a very engaging, extremely intelligent guy, and quite frankly, turned himself in after he killed his mother and her neighbor, who had come up to the house to see how she was. Edward Kemper is... Now, the reason why I bring him up is because this is a guy that had two severed heads in the trunk of his car, and this is the psychopathic part of him. He had two severed heads in the trunk of his car while he was sitting with a psychiatrist who was there to review him following his release from incarceration for some previous act of malfeasance and mayhem. And the psychiatrist signed off on him. Oh, yeah, real good boy. He's doing just great. And Kemper remarked how funny it was as he left this person's office and went out to his car with two fucking heads in his in the trunk of his car. Oh, well, what a stupid psychiatrist, you may say. Possibly psychiatrists are trained to be smarter than the rest of us when it comes to certain behavior, but we're talking about a psychopath. And psychopaths, if you're talking about a psychopathic personality, and like I said, Kemper had elements of both, you're talking about a guy who regularly cons psychiatrists. It's nothing new. They regularly cons psychiatrists and psychologists. It's how they learn how to behave. It's one of the ways that they gather tools so that they can function and perform in society without being detected. And they're real good at it. They're real good at it, and we're real bad at detecting them. I don't doubt that I myself have been conned many times. You know, I to be honest with you, I think I've been conned by psychopathic or narcissistic personalities probably more so than a lot of people, because I'm such a fucking, you know, I always believed, I was raised to believe that love is something you earn, that you have to work for it, that it doesn't just come, that just being who you are does not gain you the love of people. You have to, you know, maybe it's why I became a performer, I don't know. I'd like to think I'm healthier now, but every now and again I go out and check that heads in the trunk of my car and caress them and talk to them and say, hi, Bill. Now, it's getting kind of personal. I think I'll just get off this topic because I'm getting embarrassed. So anyway, that was, how did I get on Kemper when I was talking about drug use? Oh yeah, that's right. It's sort of, it's kind of a logical thing for me to talk about that, isn't it? By the way, this, if there's here's a guy that's talking on the TV right now about the U.S. and the ransom demand of ISIS. Are you bullshitting me? You think we're going to pay a fucking ransom? No fucking way, man. Well, one human life. Understood, one human life. That human life, by the way, belonged to a man who, I'm going to just go out on a limb and take a shot and say he knew what the risks were. You go into this world, and there's a certain amount of action and activity that takes place that you are responsible for. It does. You can't get away from it. It doesn't change. It's always going to be like that. The fuck is this? This is Donnie? Oh. Just got a message from a couple of very nice guys. Don Dabney, I did his G5 radio show in Northern California. He's in Sonoma. And Don, I say this with the greatest respect. I understand that you're filthy rich, and I hope someday to be the, you know, the beneficiary of your wealth. No, I'm kidding, man. Thank you very much. Very nice message you just sent me. He was in Los Angeles. He is wealthy. That's anyway what I was told. Which is fine. So U.S. Ebola patients discharged pose no public risk. Let's just move on to that. I think that's a very, very fascinating. I get more people with this Ebola. It's really, it's just one more area. Facebook for me is the most fascinating place in the world. I'm just doing a Facebook kind of review show, you know. I think that's all we have to do is just, you know, Phil Henry on Facebook. 2, 1 through 3. Just printing some news off here. On the Ebola thing is fantastic. And yesterday I read another panicked, dumb fucking post by some dumb shit about, there's someone else that's been hospitalized with the Ebola-like symptoms. Now, in that post, it goes from Ebola-like symptoms to 5, 6, 7 comments down, the motherfucker might as well have Ebola, you know? And this scares the shit out of me. And because you're dumb and get scared because you're dumb, I don't know that it is the most responsible thing, but it doesn't bother me. I mean, it's fun to make fun of, to be honest with you. Because you're stupid and you react stupidly to shit, doesn't necessarily mean that you're right. I'm sure you know that. But number two, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a responsible thing for you to go on the on the Facebook and start yammering on about how fucked up it is and Ebola, woo, you know. Because here's the thing, man, about Ebola. It is transmitted by way of bodily fluid, blood. In that sense, it's similar to AIDS. It's not transmitted through the air. You can't get it by breathing the fucking air. I don't give a shit if you're not a doctor. If you're, frankly, if you're not a scientist or any kind of a medical person fairly close to the research on Ebola, you really don't know what the fuck it is you're talking about. I don't give a shit if you, you know, if it stands to reason. That, I reject stands to reason, you know. I don't take that as evidence of anything if we're talking about life and death. If you wanted to have a discussion about whether or not Niagara Falls someday could flow uphill instead of down, you know, fine. Who gives a shit? Yeah, it stands to reason. Maybe that holds up in an interesting conversation late at night when you're there with your pants off having drinks in the hot tub. But stands the reason doesn't work when you're talking about a public emergency, when you're talking about life and death. Well, it stands to reason. It stands to reason that I'd sit here and patiently listen to your fucking mouth, man, because I'm a nice guy. But it also stands to reason that if you keep on talking, we're going to pick you up and throw you through that window. Do you understand?
Yes.
Thank you. U.S. Ebola patients released from hospital. Two U.S. Ebola patients. Uh-oh, shit.
Well, Phil, I don't think it's anything to laugh at. What do we know about the Ebola, and when did we know it?
Well, what does that mean?
We know plenty about Ebola. So we just saw the doctor, Dr. Brantley, was just released from the hospital, in case you wanted to know, or didn't want to know, or couldn't want to know, or shouldn't want to know. Dr. Brantley has just been released from the hospital. So we have that story. Watch, IDF releases video of strike that killed top Hamas commanders in Gaza. Well, this ought to be fucking good. Which is it, man? All right, here is the, God damn it. What is this, man? Is this a video, Jack? Or, oh, here we go. There you go. This is a commercial. We are about to look at a video released by Israel of a Hamas commander being killed. But first, I've got to watch this motherfucker. This is the video of a Hamas leader being killed by Israeli Defense Force. Well, that just about does it, doesn't it? Now, I don't know if this is the one where also a woman and a child were killed, but it's a war zone. And civilians get killed. All right, well, there you go. Man, that was quick and dirty, wasn't it? It's a war zone. Yeah.
Oh, so what's that mean?
It means there's a fucking war going on. It used to be that you would evacuate women and children, but I guess they don't do that.
Well, what about Israel? Do they evacuate women and children?
To the extent that they can, but Israel is, you know, it's a small country, and I realize that Gaza is an even smaller country. But a humanitarian evacuation of women and children before a armed conflict is about to take place is a fairly customary thing. And unless I miss my fucking guess, I haven't heard anybody, not certainly on the side of Hamas, talking about getting rid of the women and the children before you commence any kind of an armed assault. Now, Hamas knows that where they're living is a place where they're launching rockets, you know, and there's all kinds of, yeah, fuck it, man. Anyway, Indonesian court rejects election challenge, clearing the way for Joko presidency. Is that a Joko? We're going to do Eric Holder here, man, if you'll pardon the expression, do. Protesters kept others from crossing onto the street as they marched. Yeah, there was, it seems to be fairly evident, and I got to tell you, I'm really impressed with the people in this town. I really am. They have kept this about Michael Brown. They've kept people from exploiting it for other reasons. And, you know, this is a town, folks, whether you want to believe it or not, this is a town that's got mostly white cops and mostly black population. So, you know, you want to start to get your shit together on this thing. One of the things you can do is understand the community and how to properly police a community and get the fucking cops in that community to be a little bit darker skinned than the white ones, what they have. Now, a lot of dumbasses will say that race doesn't matter. Sure. Race doesn't matter until you get a fucking black president, or if you're in a white neighborhood and you got nothing but black cops, I guarantee you, this is without, and this is based upon observational data that goes the length of my life, I guarantee you the motherfucking white people would be screaming and yelling about it and asking, what the hell? We got a black fucking president. And believe from the fucking first day this guy was elected, it was about his fucking skin color. Don't give me this shit. So you have white cops in a black community, same reaction. What? First of all, you know, who are the people that run this goddamn town? You know, who are the elected officials? And let's start with them. And then let's start with the police department itself. Why are you hiring nothing but fucking white cops to police a predominantly black city? Have you learned nothing, I mean nothing, of the last 50 fucking years of history in this country when it comes to community policing and relations between the community and police? You understand that there has been tension. You understand there's been tension between white cops and black people over the last 200 fucking years, but especially, evidently, over the last 50, 60 years. You understand that's been going on, right? How fucking asleep are you, motherfuckers? So you take a town where you got nothing but white cops, nothing but black citizens, and you think this shit's going to fucking, things are going to go along just hunky-dory. Now you got a fucking prosecutor that nobody fucking trusts. You know what they got to do with this guy? You're recused. We're not interested in what your fucking opinion is. You're going to sit this one out there, Charlie. Well, now I was elected to fuck you. I'm the governor of that state. That's what I say. Sit down. Well, then I quit. Then fuck off and quit. To be honest with you, good riddance. Good fucking riddance. I'm the governor of the state. I don't want any bullshit. This fucking Nixon is typical of these fucking aging white motherfuckers who are late to the game on this shit. What? You know, they like to say that they really understand it. They don't fucking understand it. They spent about 2 seconds of their day thinking about this shit. They figure it's all going to work itself out. Why should I have to, you know, there's mayors and other guys to deal with this shit. And then when this shit gets to a boiling point, this guy looks for all the world like some stupid cunt. Now he's got this prosecutor, and this guy does not have the faith of the community. I'm telling you, folks, you know, I understand the man was elected, and I understand he was elected to do a job. You have a fucking community here that does not have any faith that this guy is going to do a fair job. Okay? Now, you can say, well, fuck them. He was elected to do the job by his constituents to do the job. Let him do that job. All right, you're right. You're right. But you also have a situation, and it's not unprecedented, where the electorate now, or the populace now, has lost complete faith in this guy, at least the target community, which is Ferguson. Every person I listen to has no faith that this fucking guy, who's very close to the cops, whose father was killed by a felon of some kind in the early 60s, his dad was a police officer, he said that makes me even more basically, he said that makes me even more of a person who is sympathetic to victims' rights. Talking about this guy McCullough. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and in just a moment, welcome back to our tune-in, our Listen Live listeners. It's time for us to, you know, sort of get our shit together, and that's exactly what we're going to do here this morning. First, did you line up the music, bud?
Well, I didn't line it up just perfectly, but...
Well, you were the one that was supposed to line it up, but you're talking here about your marijuana use.
Yeah, Phil, you went through the whole pre-show talking about smoking dope.
All right, well, we'll get to it here. Hold on. As you know, our official podcast doesn't begin until the music begins. Those of you that are listening live right now, well, you have the opportunity, you have the, I would say, the joyous occasion to listen to just a eeny, teeny, weeny, teeny, eeny bit of our preparation for that said podcast. So how do we want to start it? Where do we want to go? How do we want it to sound? Who am I? Who are you? I don't know. But we're going to get this thing kicked off with music that I will find much to my liking. We're going to kick it off with music that I will enjoy because I can't get the day started.
Well, you get the song going, for God's sake.
Don't worry about it. I can't get the day started, man, unless I'm hearing something that makes me feel good, you know. I like this Breaking Skin.
Daddy, play that song about 55 billion times.
Yeah, but you don't play that song, Sammy.
All right, you're right. I have a tendency to overplay all the songs that I dig. Sorry about that. But I like that song, Breaking Skin by Nonpoint. I just wanted everybody and their brother to hear that. All right, let's get this thing going, man.